the American debt, the deficit crisis, and $38 billion in budget cuts are the talk of Washington among politicians. But what does the average American really know? Will these cuts make a difference, or are they just a Band-Aid on a cancer? That's our show this week on American Dream. I'm your host, Nisa Islam. America's Congress voted for $38 billion in budget cuts. Much has been written and said about these cuts. Here's what Americans are viewing.
The so-called historic compromise that prevented a government shutdown and cut an astounding $38 billion from this year's budget. Whether or not you thought the cuts came in the right programs, that's a big deal. $38 billion is a lot of money. Or is it? No, the real cuts will be more like $352 million. You heard me right, $352 million, not $38 billion.
Well, first they need to acknowledge that really even a $100 billion cut down to $61 billion, down to $38 billion, down to really less than $1 billion, that's not even a cut. We need to remember that this year's budget is more than last year's budget. We are still at record-smashing levels of spending other people's money in the federal government.
The largest annual spending cut in our history.
The largest spending cuts possible. We're talking about real spending cuts here, no smoke and mirrors.
The largest annual spending cut in our history.
We asked three experts around the nation's capital just what do these budget cuts mean. Hillary Shelton is the head of the D.C. branch of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, commonly known as the NAACP.
The first problem we had with the old tax issue, or the whole expenditure, or budget cutting issue, was how much we would have in the budget. That's the revenue side. When you start talking about the wealth of Americans also being included in the maintenance of those Bush tax cuts, what we're talking about is about $750 billion of revenue that did not come in to the federal government because those wealthy of Americans were able to keep it. So it makes a tremendous difference. So now here we are. We're in a position where we're looking at budgets for the rest of 2011 that was just passed. That's when you're talking about the $38 billion of cuts that are going to have to occur, whether it ends up being only $20 billion in cuts. But either way, we're talking about cutting programs. The problem is the programs that are the most vulnerable are those that are most strategically important to the African-American community, and for that matter, other communities of color.
We then asked Andrew Fieldhouse from the Economic Policy Institute what these budget cuts really mean.
Now, as you know, Congress was loggerheads over spending for the remainder of the fiscal year 2011. The compromise that was reached and signed into law avoiding a government shutdown cut $38 billion from budget authority. Budget authority is a budget term. It provides agencies, groups, the ability to spend money. But a lot of budget authority that is signed into law is never used. It never becomes an outlay. For instance, the Capitol just got a new visitor center, a really nice building for visitors coming in. And it was under budget. There was $620 billion in budget authority, and they didn't spend all of it. So that remaining budget authority never gets used up. It is rescinded, and in part of the budget deal, they rescinded that money. They rescinded about $6 billion that was given for the decennial census that was never going to be spent out. So a lot of the money, it's a cut in the sense that Congress had approved money, and now that money has been taken away from the Census Bureau, but it doesn't actually affect outlays, meaning it's not going to have an effect on employment, it's not going to turn the economy in the wrong direction.
Nicole Wu is the Director of Domestic Policy for the Center for Economic and Policy Research. She shares her views.
I guess to start with, the $38 billion was a cut in the amount of money that the federal government is authorized or allowed to spend. But it turns out that they actually weren't going to spend a lot of it. For example, the Census Bureau finished doing the census, and they had some money left over. So they did count that towards the savings. But the low number that you quoted is actually a bit of an exaggeration as well. That's just the savings for the next 6 months. If you look at the full effects of the 2011 budget that was passed, we're seeing about $20 to $25 billion in cuts over the next couple of years. So it is still significant, just not all in the next 6 months and not quite $38 billion.
The multi-billion dollar budget cut debate seems to many to just be a distraction from the mounting trillions of dollars debt and deficit crisis threatening the life of every American citizen for generations to come. Who will these budget cuts help, and who will be hurt the most from them? We go back to our experts.
I'm not sure if there are a whole lot of tax cuts in the 2011 budget, but we're looking forward to 2012, and this is what President Obama had in his speech last week, and Representative Ryan spoke about and released the week before. And these are competing visions of the future of America. Also, the Progressive Caucus of the Congress also did a budget plan last week, which is on the other side of the spectrum. Under Paul Ryan's plan, which was passed by the House of Representatives for 2012, there are all these cuts for the wealthy. There's a lowering of corporate tax rates as well. So he does save a lot of money, over $4 trillion in 10 years, mostly by cutting programs, things like Pell Grants or Medicare. And then he gives it almost all away in tax cuts for corporations and the wealthy.
Well, when you talk about tax cuts, on the revenue side, you're talking about those who don't have to pay money into the troughs. So the wealthiest of Americans, of course, end up saving more money. They'll pay a larger proportion of their salary into the tax troughs that will pay for the expenditures, that is, the things we spend the money on. The poorest Americans, of course, in the same position, and everyone in between. The middle class usually gets squeezed throughout a process like this. In this case, the big fight on the revenue side, that is the taxation side, income for the federal government, was a fight over whether the wealthiest of Americans would have to pay what many consider their fair share versus other Americans. But when you listen to the discussion on Capitol Hill, it's pretty disingenuous. Because when you start talking about the American people, the question that usually comes to my mind is, which American people are you talking about? Unfortunately, when we're listening to these discussions to say that we can maintain the Bush tax cuts for even the wealthiest of Americans, the people that are making those decisions, that are saying those things and calling them the American people, are usually not supportive of the programmatic side of these issues, that is, the expenditures and how we pay for those programs.
There's some cuts to farm programs. They didn't just go after discretionary spending. There's a budgetary term called change in mandatory program. You know, part of the federal budget is set on autopilot, you know, legislation that requires certain outlays over time. Social Security is on autopilot. People pay in taxes, they receive benefits. The farm programs are also on autopilot. They're passed in a farm bill every 5 or 6 years. So some money came out of farm programs on the mandatory side, but for the most part, the cuts were actually pretty small. The impact of the cuts, however, going into the negotiation of the 2012 budget, which the House just voted on, there's going to be very little room for these low-hanging fruit types of cuts. I mean, any cuts for 2012 are going to go straight to the bone. The Republicans are looking for cuts in Pell Grants. That has a real effect both on the economy and on the lives of working Americans, the ability of kids to go to college.
What about President Obama's promises to the American people to fix this economic crisis? Are the very people who caused the problems now in charge of fixing the problems? Can President Obama keep his promises to the American people?
I don't think you'll see tax increases on the middle class in his first term. If he's elected to a second term, that's a campaign promise that he may have to walk away from. Allowing the Bush tax cuts for the upper-income Americans to expire is a great first step to putting this country back on a more fiscally responsible path, and is a great way to fund needed investments. The Bush tax cuts were unquestionably regressive. A disproportionate amount of their benefit went to the top earners. But not extending the tax cuts for the wealthiest 2% only gives you about $700 billion of revenue over a decade. And that's not enough, quite frankly, to close our long-term budget gap. You're going to have to look at broader tax increases. You don't have to necessarily raise taxes on the middle class. There are a lot of other progressive taxes. We've seen a huge amount of wealth accumulate to the top 1%. I think tax policies aimed at tamping down widening income inequality makes a lot of sense. A millionaire tax bracket would be a good way of doing that. That was actually proposed in one of the healthcare reform bills, a higher tax bracket on income over $1 million. I think that would make more sense than raising marginal rates on someone making $30,000, $40,000 a year.
This plan that the House passed is different from President Obama's plan, which increases taxes on people. President Obama wants to increase taxes on those who make over $250,000 a year. It does have some cuts, though. His plan has about $2 worth of spending cuts for every $1 in raising of tax increases. So most of his cuts are not as severe as the Ryan plan. He doesn't change Medicare and turn it into a private system as the Ryan plan does. He tries to look for efficiencies in the healthcare system and other ways to do it without harming people as much as the Republican plan.
Don't forget that the fight that happened on the revenue side was a fight over whether we keep the Bush tax cuts. Now, the Bush tax cuts provided a tax savings for middle and lower income Americans as well. But it also maintained tax cuts for the wealthiest of Americans, that wealthiest 5% that controlled about 95% of America's income. So in essence, the fight was over whether they'll pay their fair share as well. Well, if the Bush program prevails, and it has so far, it means that they don't pay in either. If you've cut your income and you've got to cut your deficit spending and you've already decided that the revenue side isn't going to be making any additional contributions, you're going to have to cut spending, which means you're going to have to cut program. And that's where we are now.
With so much being said and written about these budget cuts, just what does the average American know and understand?
Not a whole lot.
Nothing.
Well, one thing I do know is that the military spending was increased, while the other thing, the budget was decreased for those things. So I think that money should be redistributed from military into like other things such as education and like, I don't know, public needs.
I know that we need some budget cuts. That's about all I know.
I know that they're debating on the budget cuts right now between the Republicans and the Democrats.
I know that there is an attempt to reduce discretionary spending. I know that the original cuts called for like trillions and trillions of dollars to be cut, but the eventual outcome is going to be only a couple billion. I'm not in favor of a lot of the spending cuts. I think that a lot of them are cutting away from programs that we really need here. I think that, you know, America is really being harmed by the fact we don't have a national health care plan. I think we're really harmed by the fact that we have the most regressive tax system I've ever seen, of any nation, draconian sales tax systems that I think just prey on poor people and help rich people continue to prosper.
Here's what our experts had to say about what Americans think and understand about the budget cuts.
I do think that all too often here in Washington and on Capitol Hill, there is a deliberate effort to mystify this whole process so everyday Americans don't understand. But there is a way of translating it into everyday terms and thinking about it in terms of your own pocketbook. If you're not making money to go into your bank account, then you can't continue to maintain the programs you have, whether it's your mortgage, whether it's your car payment, if your children in college, whether it's their tuition, keeping the food on the tables, paying an ever-escalating heating bill, and other expenditures that have gone up tremendously, you can't be able to maintain paying those if those costs continue to go up when the income that you have for the work that you do or other forms of income you have are either remaining stagnant or actually going down. I mean, that's just basic economics 101. As a matter of fact, that's checkbook economics for American people.
I actually think it's been really confusing because they've been talking about the 2011 budget, the 2012 budget, and the debt ceiling all at once. They're three very separate things. So unfortunately, I've seen some polling numbers that it seems that the American public is just unhappy with everyone in Washington, the House, the Senate, Republicans, Democrats, and the president. And I honestly don't blame them. I think the American public cares about jobs, and the poll numbers show that as well. And in these debates about the deficit and debt, there's really almost no mention of jobs and the fact that we have almost 9% unemployment, which in any other context would be a total disaster. There are still millions and millions of people out of work or underemployed, and it would be nice if Washington could switch the conversation and instead of talking about debt triggers, talk about, you know, job triggers. If we don't have unemployment below a certain rate or this many jobs created, then action would have to be taken. But unfortunately, inside the Beltway, they're just talking about deficits and debt.
I think there is a lot of confusion. I think the budget is a very esoteric document. I think Americans have a couple of fallacies. One is that the federal budget works like a family budget, and that if the family can balance their budget, so should the federal budget. That's false for several reasons. One, families don't balance their budgets. Families take on huge amounts of debt for things that they think are important. No one just pays for their kid to go to college. You borrow money because you think that's an investment that's going to pay off in the long term. I think a college education is the key to success, to a good job, to being able to provide for their own family. That's a needed investment. People will borrow money to buy a house. Very few people just pay for a house. And the American family has a lot of debt, mostly because they're buying things or in making investments to help their family in the long term. The federal government works that way, too. Right now, we're borrowing a lot of money because the economy is suppressed.
Many people believe the American public is being misled by the budget cut information. They're being told one thing when really it's something else. We asked our experts if they believe the American public is purposely being misled.
I think so. I think there is a lot of fallacy out there. The Paul Ryan budget, the House Republican budget that was passed last Friday, ran a whole bunch of economic numbers, and they actually show higher GDP in 2012, despite a large near-term spending cut, which means there's a negative, what we would call a negative fiscal multiplier. They believe that somehow cutting spending will actually boost GDP growth in the near term, which is inconsistent with what any economist will tell you. Government spending in a depressed economy will boost aggregate demand. Now, they have this bizarre fallacy that somehow cutting spending creates jobs, which is fundamentally false. I think that to the extent that any policymakers saying that on the floor of the House or the Senate is disingenuous and really muddles the debate over what the budget does. Whatever the federal government does with the federal budget has huge implications for the economy, particularly in a depressed economy with unemployment near 9%.
It benefits some. Sadly and unfortunately, it benefits some, not only in our government, but others in our society. When you keep the American people, that is the majority of American voters, in the dark or in a misunderstanding position along these lines, it makes it easier for them to actually move forward programs that are much more beneficial to themselves. So again, when you talk about tax cuts for the wealthiest of Americans, we're happy that we're saving a little money in our taxes as middle class people, and we may see an additional $600 or $700 savings in our tax expenditures. While at the same time, the wealthiest of Americans are seeing hundreds of thousands of dollars in savings that they're not paying into the tax troughs, monies that they can actually afford to expend. As the saying goes, those wealthiest Americans are giving very much. They benefit under the American system, and that is something that they should be very happy about. However, it also means that if you're able to benefit that highly, those who have much is given, much is required.
I'm not quite sure. I'm not a political analyst. I work on economics, so I'm not sure what their motivations are. But I don't think it serves anyone well to be talking about all these different parts of the budget and the deficits and the debt and mixing it all up. It doesn't serve the American people very well. It's very hard to be informed.
So what should be done about America's debt? Governors are cutting state budgets. Unions are taking it to the street in protest. Here's what our street experts had to say.
I think we should increase taxation for the people that earn the most. And I don't think we should sacrifice the programs that benefit people that are trying to move up that, like education programs and programs to get people back to work.
Budget cuts in important areas like military, maybe that may be a reason. I don't know. I'm not much following it up on that.
I think the best way to reduce debt is honestly to raise taxes. I think that it's silly to beat around the bush and suggest there's any other way. It's like having a family of four and arguing that the best way to have more money is to spend less but not make any more. It doesn't make any sense. You know, the taxes are the way our government makes money and reduces debt. So I think it's sort of kind of ignorant of a lot of people every time anyone ever proposes raising taxes to, you know, throw their arms up in frustration, because that's the only way our government can ever get more funds. The idea of just simply cutting programs to create money makes no sense.
They should do what God says to them. They should read his instruction in the Bible and do what he says to them.
Our other experts had advice for the government as well.
Well, in the Congressional Progressive Caucus's budget, it's completely different. They talk about raising taxes on the wealthy, putting some taxes on Wall Street, reducing defense spending by getting out of Iraq and Afghanistan. And then they talk about actually investing in jobs. And if you invest in the economy, whether it's creating jobs, green jobs, infrastructure, and education, that actually helps to grow the economy. There are nonpartisan mainstream economists such as Moody's.com that have multiplier numbers that show that things like food stamps are actually really good for the economy because it multiplies and ripples out through the economy, and that the government spending actually has a better effect on the economy than, you know, cutting taxes for businesses.
Debt doesn't have to be reduced right away. Debt's going to continue to rise, and that's a good thing. The federal budget will continue operating budget deficits for quite some time. And because of that, debt will continue to accumulate. The goal isn't to stop the accumulation of debt. The goal is to stabilize debt as a share of the economy so it's manageable, and then eventually have debt as a share of the economy trending down. In order to do that, I think you have to do several things. The most important thing is put Americans back to work. Right now, we've got revenue at historically low levels, close to 15% of GDP, roughly the lowest they've been in 50 years before the recession. And it makes sense. If you have 14 million Americans who are unemployed, they're no longer taxpayers yet. Your revenue base is taking a huge hit because so many people are out of work. So that's a first step. I think there are very high returns to putting people back to work, and it's a very cheap time to do that. So first, I would strengthen the economic recovery.
When the president says, we'll set a cap at $250,000, most Americans don't make $250,000, so they will still be able to enjoy the savings. But those who do, again, can pay a little more. If you're making a lot more, a graduated program means that you pay a little more, and that's just fine. It's not hurtful to the point that it cuts into your ability to continue to invest in other businesses. There are tax benefits for those. Or being able to educate your children or provide your family with health care. Those aren't even issues that are on the table for them, for those wealthiest of Americans. They've got that covered. But for everyday Americans, those are the challenges that we deal with every single day. How do I make sure that I keep my car on the road to get me to work? Gas prices are now looking at $5 a gallon. How do I keep my house heated in the wintertime? When oil prices to be able to fuel my furnace in the basement have also increased by 40% over the last year. When you get into those real conversations about the real cost of simply being able to maintain in America, the discussion has to be the differential between different income levels and how people can fairly contribute to the system.
Many have agreed that just cutting $38 billion from America's budget will do little to save her from her financial problems. Her debt is estimated at over $14 trillion. Her deficit is estimated at $1.5 trillion. How can America continue to run with a deficit of $1.5 trillion? For Press TV in Washington, I'm Nisa Islam.